House State Affairs Committee coming to order at 5:46, Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019, the Max Grunberg Room. Martha, will you please call the roll?
Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Vance? Representative Shaw? Representative Ledoux? Here. Representative Story?
Here.
Representative Fields?
Here.
Representative Craig Johnson?
Here. And with five members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Please silence your cell phones. And we have a truncated agenda today. We're taking up first House Bill 98 from Representative Klayman, who has invited testimony on the line, so we're going to move that to the top of the heap, especially coming out of the extended API oversight hearing. And then next in our legislation previously heard, HB 96 for committee consideration and action, and let the record reflect Representative Shaw joined us at 5:47. Representative Klayman and staff, Ms. Cupitz, please come forward, put yourselves on record, and present your legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Matt Klayman. I'm the state representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage. And first off, I want to thank you all for being here late this afternoon and hearing this bill first. Alaska is currently facing a number of public safety challenges, a devastating opioid epidemic, cuts to public safety resources, and a down economy with rising unemployment rates. With Alaska's financial challenges, we work each day and every day to use our public safety resources wisely and to improve public safety. Recently, law enforcement officers in Alaska have reported increased difficulty with arresting and prosecuting serial theft offenders. And after discussions with law enforcement officials, I introduced House Bill 98 to strengthen Alaska's laws relating to theft and other offenses against property and to improve public safety by giving police officers and prosecutors additional tools for arresting and prosecuting criminals. House Bill 98 effectively targets serial theft offenders and is supported by the National Insurance Crime Bureau and the Alaska Peace Officers Association. And before I pass it over to my staff, I'd like to note for the committee that I've submitted version M, a sponsor substitute, in place of version A of the bill, the reason being that version A of the bill did not have applicability provisions, and so that's the change from version A to version M. And with that, I will turn it over to my staff, Lizzie Cubitz, to explain the details of the bill.
And Ms. Cubitz, before we get to you, just to keep things neat and tidy, may I entertain a motion to adopt the CS in question?
Mr. Chairman, I move the House State Affairs Committee adopt the sponsor substitute to House Bill 98 as our working document.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the working document is adopted. Ms. Cubitz, please proceed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lizzie Cubitz. I'm staff to Representative Matt Klayman. Thank you for hearing House Bill 98 today. So, looking at version M of House Bill 98, starting with Section 1, Section 1 amends AS 1146.130 subsection A to allow prosecutors to aggregate crimes under theft in the second degree if they occur within 180 days, the amount is more than $750 and less than $25,000, and the property or services are taken from commercial establishments. Moving on to Section 2. Section 2 amends AS 1146.285 to update the statute related to fraudulent use of an access device to include an identification document. This clarifies a gap in the statute identified by the Court of Appeals in Canton versus State, in which the Court of Appeals held that a driver's license was not an access device within the meaning of AS 46285. And I believe a copy of that case was provided to committee members in your bill packet. Section 3 amends AS 1146370 by adding a new section establishing the crime of possession of motor vehicle theft tools as a Class A misdemeanor. This new section is similar to another statute, Alaska Statute 1146315, which makes it a crime to possess burglary tools. Finally, Section 4 contains applicability provisions. And I'll note for the committee that we have Margaret Bergman, a detective from the Anchorage Police Department, online, and we've invited her to provide testimony. And with that, we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Kubitz. Questions from the committee? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To aggregate, what is that? I mean, I know what to aggregate means, but in the legal sense, if you aggregate a crime, how is that different than just charging someone with another crime?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, Margaret Bergman, who's online, might describe this from a sort of boots on the ground perspective a little later. But the point of that section is to deal with repeat offenders within that 180-day period. So people that are going and robbing a commercial institution, and they are not meeting that $750 threshold, this would be a way to sort of aggregate those crimes, pack them together, and then prosecute.
Follow up.
So you're aggregating the value of the items stolen so that they can reach the value of $750, which is a minimum threshold for a misdemeanor, or is that, am I getting that close to correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wool. Yes, so on line 15 of page 2 of version M, the combined value of the property or services is $750 or more, but less than $25,000. So yes, it would be the combined value of those items.
Thank you.
Representative Story.
Yes, I noticed that the fiscal note says it's indeterminate, and just with the high volumes of theft that has been occurring, I'm kind of surprised that they could not estimate if there would be more of a fiscal note than the zero fiscal note.
Representative Story, through the chair, it's been my experience in bills like this that the department frequently says they can't determine because they literally have consistently taken the position that they don't know. It's interesting because if you had three theft offenses for stealing from Fred Meyer on three successive weeks, that's three charges, and if you consolidate them into a single charge, there would be only one charge. So does that mean there's more work or less work? And they would say, we can't really tell you.
A follow-up.
Representative Story.
Just when they talk about the Office of the Public Defender, or Public Advocacy, I don't know how well-staffed they are. And from what I've heard, they are not very well, don't have a lot of staff. So that just concerns me that we don't we might not have support to be timely in addressing the issues.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are the implications that if you can aggregate the total amount of the theft over time, that will increase the severity of the crime and make it a jailable offense? Is that ultimately what, instead of the someone steals a $50, or I guess I'll use a higher value, a $300 item, and it's a certain level of misdemeanor, but if they get up above $750, then it's a higher level of crime, and is it jailable? Is this a deterrent?
It's a tool for, through the chair, Representative Wool, it's a tool for prosecutors and police. It means that if you've got somebody that the police have been investigated and they're involved in serial offenses, it gives them an additional tool instead of having to charge them with three misdemeanors, as the example I gave Representative Story. Instead, the prosecutors and the police could say, well, we're going to charge you with a felony. And so it gives them leverage. It doesn't require that they aggregate. It gives them the option to do so if it makes sense under the circumstances. But I would note that all these offenses are jailable even at a misdemeanor level. It depends upon the circumstances.
Further questions from the committee? I'm going to take a brief at ease. back on the record and to make a few notes for the record, the motion to adopt the CS previously, I think, is moot because the work draft that was adopted was, in fact, a sponsor substitute, which has not been read across on the House floor. So the working document in this committee is still the original legislation for HB 98, and next hearing what we can do is adopt as a CS work draft /M, which has been circulated to members of the committee. I mean, I think for the purposes of discussion, we're all good, but just want to make sure that the sort of sequence is right. And I'm going to take a quickie so I can confer with the House Record Secretary. Going back on the record, and I think my understanding confirmed, so effectively the working document is in fact before the committee is in fact version /A as originally introduced, and in the next meeting we can adopt the version /M as the committee substitute, but I want to be clear on the record that the version /A is the working document for the committee. For the legislation, Representative Ledoux, a question.
So can we talk about the M version, because
through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the only difference is the last language about application language. So the actual substance of it is no change.
Thank you.
Any questions about version /A or version /M? At this time, we'll transition to invited testimony, and online we have Margaret Bergman from Anchorage Police Department. Ms. Bergman, if you have comments on HB 98, please proceed to put yourself on record and speak to the legislation.
Good evening. I've prepared a statement regarding HB 98, and just want to let you know I am a detective with the Anchorage Police Department, and I thank you for inviting me to speak on behalf of this bill. I've worked with the Anchorage Police Department since 2000, and I would like to address the three proposed changes. In regards to the addition to the theft in the second degree statute, 1146-138-8, regarding the combining of the value of property or services taken from one or more persons or commercial establishments within 188 days. I've been involved with the Alaska Organized Retail Crime Alliance, and I work with loss prevention. Alaska does not have organized retail crime statutes. I've worked with Washington Police Agency regarding their ORC laws and alliance with their loss prevention throughout the state. And organized retail theft is considered a gateway crime that often leads to major crime rings that use the illicit proceeds to fund other crimes. What we found here are addicts are given shopping lists, which we often find on them or in stolen vehicles with them in exchange for drugs. The thefts occur at large box stores. They occur at residences, meaning burglaries, and include stolen vehicles. The shoplifting thefts are misdemeanors, level crimes, and with the identification of these suspects are charged as such in the municipality. The repeat suspects appear to be undeterred with the misdemeanor charges, and this change would allow for the combining of the values of services in the last stolen property and services in the last 180 days for the police to be able to charge a felony. And again, the goal is to deter future crimes by the suspect and reduce their criminal enterprise and thus increasing the safety of Alaskan communities. Second, regarding the addition of the fraudulent use of an access device or identification document language. This came, I think they have it referenced for you, in 2015, the Court of Appeals, Kankenton versus State of Alaska, held that the driver's license was not an access device within the meaning of the theft statute under the rule of lenity. And according to the court's opinion, the statutes defining access device and identification document were enacted as a part of a larger bill addressing the problem of identity theft. As a part of that same crime bill, the legislator amended other sections of the criminal code to bring it up to date with more technological, sophisticated means through which people improperly access the finances and financial credits of others. And the court noted that driver's license is specifically included in the definition of identification document, but is not listed as an access device. And I want to give you a little history regarding identity theft. In 2005, House Bill 131 recognized that identity theft is on the increase in Alaska and the country, and the changes would bring penalties for those crimes closer in line with the federal criminal laws. In 2005, HB 131 increased the penalty from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony for three things: theft of an access device, such as a credit card or bank account number. Two, the second thing that it increased to a C felony was the crime of fraudulent means of an access device if the value is of the property or services obtained is $50 or more. And three, the crime of obtaining an access device or identification document by fraudulent means. When Senate Bill 91 was enacted, it in essence criminalized the felony fraudulent use of an access device, increasing that amount to $750, which in 2005 the intent was to have it at $50. The access devices or identification documents stolen during a burglary, vehicle theft, or vehicle tamperings, and the furtherance of those crimes by using the access device or the information from the access device or identification documents that were stolen are used to commit fraud and theft crimes, and it is only a misdemeanor currently. A stolen credit card or check are rarely, if at all, used to purchase large items, meaning felony level. And in my experience, they purchase things such as groceries, gas, and other items from stores that are small, and oftentimes the stolen information from identification documents from one victim is entered on the stolen check of another victim and then used to commit fraud. So we now have two victims of identity theft. Returning to the HB 131 limits of $50 or more will provide the police with the ability to charge and deter that continuation of this crime and the re-victimization. I've worked a number of financial crimes in the past few years, and I've requested assistance for prosecution from the federal government. Theft of mail, burglaries, vehicle tamperings, and theft of purchase and such have the suspects attempting to collect personal identifiable information, otherwise known as PII, and account information in order to conduct fraud and identity theft. And through my investigations, I've discovered that the suspects save the victim's PII, and they will actually use it later, oftentimes when the victims are unaware. The suspects gain access to the financial information of the victims with the use of their PII, which they obtained with identification documents, not just access devices. And I want to reference the federal definition of access device is much broader than the state's. And I'm more than happy to give that to you if you like, but it does include things like personal identification number, mobile identification number, and a few other things that our definition does not include. I would like to mention also that individuals now store bank information and other PII on their cell phones as well, and a discussion regarding how this fits into the access device definition I think is worthwhile on your side. And lastly, regarding the addition of the possession of motor vehicle tools to the law, stolen vehicles are a constant reality and problem to the community. Alaska has laws regarding possessing burglary tools, but nothing regarding possessing motor vehicle tools. I've seen shaved keys, bump keys, old and worn out keys that are not shaved or altered, but they start a vehicle, jiggler keys, all these have been found on suspects. And oftentimes we will see these on individuals that have been reported to the police by community members as being suspicious in parking lots and neighborhoods walking around cars, which this usually leads to vehicle tampering. We've also discovered them on suspects in possession of stolen vehicles as well. I would like to note that law enforcement has received information from other states and insurance groups regarding suspects using electronic technology to access newer vehicles that have key fobs. So limiting the definition to only physical keys and not providing for these electronic devices used may pose a problem since vehicles are increasingly keyless. I believe that we need statutes and definitions not to be ambiguous, as the Court of Appeals found in Kincanton. And I found that suspects have no concern over the impact to the victims or the community as a whole. And I support these changes and will assist the Anchorage Police Department, and I believe other municipalities throughout the state of Alaska in a continued effort to keep our communities safe. I thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bergman. Questions from the committee? I have one question.
A quick one.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The access device identification card, this has to be used in a certain kind of crime. In other words, what if someone just has someone else's driver's license to get into a bar?
So in regard to if the access device is stolen or the identification document is stolen, it is a crime to possess that.
Paula?
Is that a crime right now?
No. Right now it's just an access device, and as King Canton versus the state showed, the intent back when they created these laws in 2000, that larger crime bill, they were ambiguous as to the answer of whether identification documents were under access device or not, or a part of that. And I can tell you from personal experience that bank statements that have the account number on it, which is an identification document because it's got the number on it, have been used to create checks that are then used for forgeries and frauds. So possessing that stolen property from somebody's mail, and that's often what happens is they go and steal the mail and get their PII from it and then create their own checks. They create their own IDs from that stolen mail and then commit further crimes.
Another question.
Follow up.
Thank you. This has to do with the first, the aggregation of crimes. So you mentioned that sometimes you find addicts with shopping lists that are sent to stores to steal stuff for somebody else in exchange for drugs, and the misdemeanor hasn't been a deterrent. But if you aggregate the charges together, it'll be a felony. Do you think the addicts will respond to that as a deterrent, or are they just addicts and will respond to drugs?
That's a tough question, because I think it's depending on how far they are into their addiction or not. But I will tell you that when we find them with shopping lists and they're talking about this enterprise of how they go and get their drugs, and one detective told me they're getting 50 cents on the dollar right now for brand new in-the-box items. This is through our interviews, just so you know. But 50 cents on the dollar is what they're getting in value of drugs. Now, my goal here is to, one, stop the crime. There are consequences for everything, social, criminal. But I also think that the only way to get them to stop with the drugs is they need some sort of assistance. And I'm can't tell you what the solution is to that for their rehabilitation, but I think that the more that we can put them in a jailable, not just a misdemeanor, because the municipality, we are, you know, our jail offenses, it just depends on how many misdemeanors they have to bump it up to a felony. But the more that we can stop the victimization of these commercial businesses, the burglaries, I think that's the most important thing. And do I think that a felony is going to stop? To be honest with you, it depends on the person. I think I spoke with you before, but it depends on the person. And I've seen it both ways. I've seen somebody clean up, but then I've seen others that have not. We do not have a conspiracy law for property crimes, and my goal is to find the big fish, but oftentimes we can't do that without the assistance of the people that we're arresting for these thefts and get the information from them.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Detective Bergman, procedural note, was your initial invited testimony, do you have it in written form?
Representative Clayman advised me. But I don't know, this is my first time testifying, so I really don't know the answer to that.
Do you have your initial testimony written out when you were first making your comments to the committee?
I apologize. So I jotted some notes down just to make sure I covered what I felt was pertinent at the time, and I knew you guys would probably have questions.
Great. Thank you. You're just fine. The only reason I asked is it can save the House Records Secretary a lot of time transcribing if the comments are verbatim. Wonderful. My question as far as the bill goes is, in terms of looking at motor vehicle theft tools and criminalizing possession of those tools, the analogy in law was with burglary tools and how it's a crime to be in possession of those. And this is all somewhat new territory for me. Are there other kinds of items in criminal law where if you have them on your person, that's a crime?
So I've been in property for as long as I've been back here in detective since 2009, or I've been in intel, and so that's my bread and butter, so to say. Burglary tools are what I deal with. I know generically, like drug paraphernalia, depending on what it is, it used to be a crime. It's no longer. But that does account to, you know, what we document when we arrest somebody. I cannot think of anything else where, at this time, where it would be comparable.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Clayman, for bringing this bill before the committee. We're going to hold this legislation and bring it back to the committee at a future date. And this time we're going to go to the next item and last item on the agenda. That's House Bill 96 and our bills previously heard. This is the third hearing in State Affairs for this piece of legislation. I'm going to provide the opportunity for the sponsor to make remarks, and feel free to just make them from here, Representative Fields, if that suits you, and go to committee questions as they might exist in comments, and see to the will of the committee. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really just want to thank my colleagues for working through a lot of complex issues on this bill. I want to thank Representative Shaw for his longstanding commitment to the Pioneer Homes and the Veterans Home. I want to thank Mr. Lasley, with whom I've met multiple times over the last few days, to make sure that this bill is as much in alignment with where the department wants to go in terms of a needs-based program while still providing certainty for residents. I also appreciate the work of Ledge Finance and House Finance Committee staff in working through to make sure that if this bill ultimately passes, the general funds are programmed in such a way that the department can use them, and I'm confident that that will be the case, and you have an updated net zero fiscal note in front of you. So with that, I would appreciate the committee moving the bill on to its next step, which would be the HES committee. I'm sure it will also get a finance referral. Time is short this year, so I'd appreciate your support, and I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Before going to committee comment, are there questions relating to the substance of the bill from members? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to ask questions as I have on previous meetings with this bill. I have some questions for Mr. Clinton Lasley, if I may, just to clarify a couple things, because I still am unsure of the ramifications or of passing or not passing this bill, which seems like it's inevitable it's going to leave this committee. So I just would still have some questions.
Please proceed.
Okay. And Mr. Lasley, thank you for being here and answering my questions. So I understand, I understand what Representative Fields is trying to do, which is to bring some of the rates up based on inflation, going back to a certain date when the rates were set, I guess, at the last time they were set. And I think this all came about because there was a rate increase proposed by the administration. So this was to counteract that so that the rates wouldn't be raised up too high. So I guess my question is, if this bill were not to go anywhere, would the rate increase that was proposed, is that a foregone conclusion, or is it possible that the rates will just fall back to where they were prior to the proposed rate increase?
For the record, Clinton Lasley, Director of Division of Alaska Pioneer Homes. Representative Wohl, through the chair, The current rates proposed by the administration are in the regulatory process, and so through the regulatory process, it requires them to be posted for 60 days, public testimony, and from that public testimony, with all information gathered, then the Commissioner of Health and Social Services would make a final decision on the rates to be set forth. So it's in the regulatory process. So if this bill was not to pass, then we would continue through the regulatory process, and a determination would be made.
So it's my understanding that this bill proposes to raise rates from where they were, say, last year. But in relation to the proposed regulation change that's in the process right now, are these rates lower or higher than the proposed changes that's in process right now?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, these rates are lower. The proposed rates by the administration is to raise rates reflective of the true cost of providing services, and the rates proposed in HB 96 are less than what it cost us to provide services.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you. But they are higher than what was existing, so it's sort of setting up a compromise and middle ground between what exists prior and what is being proposed by the administration, which probably will go through since it's in the regulatory process. And the commissioner, I know you can't speak to that really, but it's in a process that is on its way to being changed. So these are coming up between what exists and what is proposed. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wold, that's correct.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? That takes us to committee comment. Before possible action, any members wish to express comment or perspective on House Bill 96? Representative Story.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Representative Fields, for looking at this and bringing this bill forward. I have conflicting thoughts about the bill. I think that putting in policy rates is always something that I hesitate to do, because I think as legislators, oftentimes, from what I've seen, we don't set rates, or we look to the information that we get from staff. But I also, as people know, I'm very concerned with the huge jump in rates that were proposed. I want to say 138%. I can't exactly remember all of them. But these rates are 20, maybe 30. And then we add a level 4 and 5 care, which is responsive to the information that we received. I know there's a process of this will go to another committee and it will be looked at, and I think I would like to send it on the process and see what information comes out in looking at it more. And I just wanted to express that I do not want to see the rates jump as high as they have jumped. I understand that it does cost more, and I think it's some incremental rates are good, only because I just feel I know seniors and families have been planning for a long time. Their care and their cost of living situations, and I think to jump so drastically is not the way to go. I also know we've had some situations of how families will be impacted that we've heard about through testimony, and with drastic jumps in the rates. I did think about doing an amendment where rates couldn't jump among a certain amount of certain set amount. But I also know that there are situations, this is why I think it's hard to set it in policy. I think there's situations where people have to be more nimble, flexible on information that comes in. So I just, I'm torn, but I'm feeling to pass this bill on to the next level and see how the information that we get.
Thank you, Representative Story. Anybody else? Representative Wall.
I'll jump in if no one else is. I have difficulties with this bill. I agree with Representative Story. For us to be setting rates is a little bit of micromanagement. And I draw the analogy of the ferry system that is also a heavily subsidized service that many Alaskans use. And if you were to figure out what the true cost is to ride the ferry, i.e., you know, divvy up what it costs and how many people ride it, probably some people on board that ferry could afford the true cost. It costs you $10,000 to go from Bellingham to Kodiak with a car. Should we make them pay it? I don't know. I think that's what the administration is proposing. So, I guess it's a discussion of how much subsidy we want to allow. Representative Fields has sort of struck a middle ground, so that it's kind of splitting the difference. I guess that's okay. Maybe his rates are too high. I mean, maybe people should be subsidized even if they have money. It's end of lifetime time for people, and maybe they shouldn't be drained entirely of their bank account. But if that's the case, anyhow, I think it's tricky. And medical billing is not a simple thing, and then there's a lot of factors to it. But I won't get in the way.
Thank you, Representative Wall. Seeing Representative Ledoux.
I've got some concerns with this bill, as I've already probably enunciated them during the course of these hearings. I think if people are able to pay, and as long as there is nobody is going to be denied service if they can't pay, nobody is going to be evicted if they can't pay, then it becomes a matter of, at the end of one's life, should the inheritance go to the family members, who might actually be out-of-state people, I mean, some of them might be, or should people pay what they can? But I'm not going to try to hold up the bill.
I'm going to add a quick comment. I wasn't expecting deliberation of the bill to sort of go where it went, and better understanding the administration's proposal has been interesting. I mean, for lack of a better word, the implication or the effect of what the administration is proposing is what a lot of conservatives like to call a death tax. It's basically anybody who's in a Pioneer home, their sort of net assets are going to be liquidated much faster, and they're going to go to the state. And I'm sort of wasn't quite expecting that when I first heard the news about the rate increase, and it's a kind of a interesting question. I think this conversation will continue in future committees, and appreciate Representative Fields putting this forward, and I'm sure this broader question will also be considered as well. With that, turning to the will of the committee, looking for a motion, Representative Shaw.
Mr. Chair, I move version 31-LS0646 /U of House Bill 96 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, House Bill 96, version /U, moves from committee. A couple of housekeeping notes. Happy birthday, Representative Story, and happy birthday, Representative Shaw, belatedly. A few days late on both cases, but we're honored to serve alongside both of you. Just a quick note on House Bill 98. If members have amendments on House Bill 98, we're going to ask that those be submitted by Friday, so we have the entirety this week, by 5 p.m. And we will be back Thursday at 3 p.m. for our next meeting. And with that, we are adjourned at 6:28 p.m.